And so I'm here today to speak on spiritual power. But before I want to get into my talk, as you know, I like to do a light little meditation light, if you will, just to kind of to steady and especially, like I said, you know, with everything going on. And then I'll share a little story. This morning, one of my best childhood friends, one of the other blessings of moving back home is I get to be around my childhood friends. And so she texts me this morning and she says, hey, my car's broken down, but I have to go watch. I'm dog sitting. And the dog happens to be right in your neighborhood. So I said, sure. So this morning was a surprise. My dad, the dog, me, and my mom all went over to the house to see this beautiful little rescue older deaf dog named Sasha, and we took her on a walk and we cuddled with her, and it was a beautiful little surprise morning, but it's been busy, so I think a nice little breather meditation might be cool for all of us, whether we've been just drinking coffee or we've been cuddling dogs. So I'm going to start with a little meditation, just to, if you're able to join, you know, that's great. If you're driving, please do not. Take some deep breaths, but don't, you know, close your eyes. I was thinking today, because it's a rainy day here, and like, I personally love storms and I love rain, but I know not everyone, does. So I said, okay, let me take some inspiration from it. But we won't do a full rainy day. Let's have a start by settling into our seat. You can wiggle a little bit, or if you prefer to stand, that is fine too. We're just gonna kind of wiggle and move our bodies and just let the blood flow through our muscles, because, you know, if we've had busy mornings or if we've had a lazy morning maybe and we wanna get the blood flowing, we're just kind of letting that life force move through us. Move your shoulders a little bit. Close your eyes if you'd like. Now take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. And the yogis teach that you try to inhale for, you know, X amount of seconds and then exhale for double that. So if you breathe in for 2 seconds, you exhale for 4. Something to keep in mind. My mama always taught me that. She does yoga every day, sometimes twice a day. Just how important the breath is. You don't breathe enough. Steady and settled. I've taken some inspiration from the rain outside. I'm right next to my bedroom window. It's beautiful. It's just pitter-pattering down and soaking into the earth. And it reminds me of the fact that it's August and September's coming up soon. And in many pagan cultures, I'm not going to try to pronounce the name, but there's a harvest festival at the end of August and September, because it's when the bounty comes, and you enjoy it and you store it away for the colder months ahead. And so I think about how this harvest is here and coming up, and the rain is nurturing it. And there's so many gorgeous sunflowers here. You know, my parents live closer to nature than I ever lived when I was in Northern Virginia. And there's just sunflowers as tall as small trees in some people's yards. Oh my gosh. And our neighbors have apples already starting. And my friend from work has her first pumpkins, and she made pumpkin bread, and just bounty, 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 bounty. So I'm going to take us through a little meditation of picture a garden. The garden can be whatever you'd like. It could be a beautiful English garden of hedgerows and bushes and English roses, or it could be bountiful food, heavy, gorgeous tomatoes, crisp green peppers, delicious, fresh, cherry tomatoes, you know, orange and gold and red, or beautiful dahlias, which, you know, 'tis the season, and they're beautiful star shapes, and you know, the thunder just rumbled here. So I guess Earth agrees with me. They like that idea. We have just so much bounty in this garden, and I just invite you to walk through it. And whether it's a stone beneath your feet, you know, beautifully stoned pathways, or if it's just earth and dirt, if you're wearing shoes or barefoot, whatever feels good to you. My gosh, I just invite you to look at this beauty. Look at this bounty. Take in the colors. I'm picturing one of my favorite dahlias, which is a pink one. And it starts with an explosion of bubblegum pink, and then the edges are tinged with tangerine. It's just magical. Magical. And then I'm thinking of our tomato plants in my parents' garden that are so, so strong and bountiful that they're heavy with tomatoes. We've made so much caprese salad, and then Eastwood, our dog, sometimes sneaks out there and just starts munching on a tomato or two. Just has himself a little snack because there's so many. I love that. Just bounty. Bounty. And I invite you to look close, and you might see a little friend, a little critter, some caterpillars. I have seen so many ladybugs. I've made so many wishes, so many little ladybugs. I invite you to look at the dew. I love going out in the mornings and before, or I even take a break from my work and I just go and I look at the morning dew. And I sit in the grass with the dog, or I sit and look at the garden. Look at the remnants of the rain. The earth is nice and moisturized and hydrated. All the water it needs, it has. And I invite you to take a seat now. And there's a beautiful bench. And this bench can be whatever you'd like. It could be a beautiful classic wooden bench. For me, it's a beautiful, just wrought iron, beautifully designed, swirling designs of metal, beautifully designed, comfortable metal bench. And sit with me, and you're settled, and it's a beautiful bench, and it's completely comfortable. You just relax. You feel your every muscle just melts into this bench, and you're surrounded by the beauty of earth and her gifts, if they're flowers, if they're vegetables, if it's a bird who's come to sing you a song. Reach out and touch maybe a petal, or run your fingers over the smooth skin of a tomato. Feel that beauty, that bounty. Take a breath in and exhale. And know that every single thing in this garden, vegetable, flower, tiny creature, was imbued and is imbued, and you included, with the same spiritual power that Holmes talks about in this chapter. And I want you to feel that energy buzzing. Buzzing, buzzing, buzzing with the same power as I literally got a lightning strike earlier. So that same power, magnificent. Now I invite you to just open up your eyes, and you can blink a little bit if you'd like. Or just kind of come back into your physical body, but you keep that same relaxation, that same level of calm. That's nice. And the thunder rumbled again. So again, I think God's agreeing with me. So I want to start by saying, you know, as I was reading this chapter, I'm forever amazed at how, like, these synchronicities pop up in my life, because I initially was going to this chapter like, okay, this chapter is going to be about how to use the spiritual power, like some more about treatments. And it really wasn't. It was actually like a description of what the power is. And specifically, like, I took it as like how to deal with and speak to people who are like in other certain religions, or the scientism religion, as I call it, where they're so very, very strictly empiricists, and, you know, how to sort of approach it, and like how the concept of God and oneness and spirit and energy isn't at odds with any of that, and in fact is a part of it all. So it was really wonderful for me because, pausing for a drink, because I encounter many people in my life who they just don't get it. I try to explain my beliefs and they just don't click with it. And you know, that's okay. Like, that's okay. To each their own. We're not sitting here converting people or acting as missionaries. But sometimes it's nice to be able to say, hey, you know, this is how my point of view kind of fits in and molds with yours and works and clicks, and like they don't have to be at odds. And specifically, I had dinner last night with an old friend of mine. We met when I was 15 and he was 18. And he's always been super handsome. So we went on a couple dates. We dated a little bit in college. And I've watched him, you know, mature. And he's less angry now. But he was, for many, many, many years, the majority of our much younger years, an atheist and a staunch atheist and a staunch, I call it religion of science in a way. Like, everything was only science to him. He's a computer coder, engineer guy, computer programmer, and like strict empiricist, only science, nothing else. And again, I've watched him become less, I would say, bitter and angry, like willing and eager to fight or argue about it. But he still, we were talking about something last night. I think we were discussing, we were in a Japanese restaurant. I was just saying, you know, like, would you ever want to go to Japan? And he was like, yeah, maybe. And I said, I would love to go see Mount Fuji because I think it's very, very spiritual or something. I said something like that. And he said, oh, none of that's real. Hmm. And I, what was I even saying? I think I was like, I was even saying, we were just talking about where we go travel. And I said, oh, I'd love to go on a ghost tour in New Orleans and all that. And he's like, none of that's real. None of that's even real. And I was like, and like, he was so sure of it. And I kind of was just like, okay, you know, you don't have to believe it, but there's people who do. And he's like, well, they need to be medicated. And I said, okay. I'm like, I mean, what are you going to, like, and then he shared like his mother's mental illness issues. And I deal with mental illness. I'm fairly open about it. You know, I've been through a lot, and I, you know, there's people in my loved one's life who've dealt with it and deal with it. And like, I'm not belittling it. I absolutely know. And I was like, I understand that, you know, there's a time and a place and a point for all medicine and all forms of healing and help. And I said, but you know, that I just think there's a lot more than the scientists that you seem to worship, you know? And it was interesting because we've chatted before, and like, I was like, you do realize that like Einstein believed in God, and even Hawking at the end of his life was saying there's something greater. And then he's like, well, Carl Sagan was an atheist. And I was like, okay. And that was his right. Like, that's fine. I'm like, I'm not sitting here to argue and have you believe in something greater. That's not my job. That's not my journey. But it was really interesting to have that conversation with him and then to come home and start reading Holmes. And then like, he talks about exactly that. Like on page 3 of this chapter, he starts talking about how, there are people who are so focused on making spirit tangible and measuring it. And Holmes starts the chapter by saying, well, let's define spirit. And spirit, he talks about how it's something greater than our assumptions, our beliefs, our very 3D narrow minds. And he says, there are a lot of people in the world who are just, you know, measure the soul. The quote was something like, measure the soul, but you can't say what the soul is. And he says, there are people who are sitting here like, well, give me proof of God. you know, there's that experiment where some scientist measured the body before a person passed on and then measured it afterward. And it was like point something of an ounce lighter. And he was like, that was the soul leaving. And like the point and the brilliance and the beauty of this is that it's not something that's physically something we can measure or see or put into a box. And Holmes says, it is physical. It becomes physical. It is, I loved the little quote. He says something like, you know, you talk to these scientists or these analytical psychologists, like I can guarantee you, like I'm going to see my psychiatrist tomorrow. And if I started talking to him about God, he'd be like, that's not what I'm here for. Like, that's, you know, that's not what I want to talk about. Because, you know, again, a lot of these analytical, logical people, they just don't, they want proof. And Holmes is like, ask them what makes them breathe. And they're going to say, okay, you're on sympathetic nervous system. But like, what makes that work? What makes your neurons click? Your neurons fire? What makes meat and potatoes turn to fingernails is what Holmes says. You go to sleep at night and there's something steering your subconscious that gives it enough power and energy and knowledge to keep you breathing, to keep your heart beating. If you watch a beautiful baby who is just fresh to this world, and two of my good friends, they just had a beautiful little boy named Michael, and he was 9 weeks early. And so fresh and new, and he's beautiful and strong now. But to just meet him and to see him, just this little bundle of pure spirit. I'm getting emotional a little bit, but like that is, there is a constant, steady heartbeat and thrum of spirit and love and energy at the center of all. And it stretches out like a tree, like ivy and vines, and it touches everything. And it becomes manifest through us and through the physical. Dr. Joseph Murphy speaks about, one of my favorite examples is, you put an acorn in the ground and you don't know how it happens, but with sunlight and water, it becomes a tree, you know? It becomes an oak tree. And that beautiful power, my friend who grows her, she loves her garden. Every day she goes to her garden. And she gave me lettuce and beautiful, squash. And that energy thrumming in the garden and in her heart and her love for it, that is spirit. Spirit is not something you can write down in a lab report. It's not something you can measure in a beaker. It's all of that. All of that beautiful inspiration and knowledge and the brilliance of these people, of the discovery of penicillin and saving lives, of, you know, vaccines that, you know, we can now use and help prevent horrible sicknesses and death, and the brilliance of the concept of a computer that we can sit here and do this. Like, that is all spirit and God and beauty and strength and love and bounty and connection and harmony. All of that pulsing, beautiful heart of life made manifest and acting through these brilliant men and women and people who took the spirit within them and made it physically manifest through their actions. That is how we measure God. And, you know, I'm thinking back to another conversation with my friend. And we were talking once many, many years ago. This was actually before I even discovered science of mind, and I was still going through quite a bit of bitterness with healing from my religious upbringing, my extreme religious upbringing. We were talking once, and I think in a way, in our late teens and early 20s, we were kindred spirits in that we were both his dad as well, very religious. And so we both had that sort of anger. And I just remember he said something like, you know, someone gets in a car wreck and they survive and they thank God. Oh, thank you, Jesus. Praise Jesus. And then it's like, why not thank the engineer who made the car? The people who told you to put on your seatbelt, the first responders. And I was like, at the time, I think I was like 19 or 20. I was like, yeah, right? It's so dumb. And now, you know, at 29, I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, you are thanking God. You're thanking, it's there. It's in the, God is in the brilliance of the engineer who made that car, the brilliance of the people who tested that car and said, no, we need to alter this so that there's safety for this, or we need to change this airbag or this seatbelt. The brilliance of that. It's in the brilliance of the first responders or someone who called 911 when they saw your car. It's in this, it's in the way that you kept calm, you know, it did the best you could. It's, that's all God, you know, that's all God. You're thanking God, you're thanking Jesus. And what did Jesus say? You know, the Father works through me. It's not I, but the Father, you know, Jesus knew that. Jesus knew I was a part of, he said, I was a part of all of this. The Father is me, the Father, you know, we're one. And so you're thanking Jesus, you're thanking God, you're thanking all of it. In fact, it's interesting, you know, because people are like, oh yeah, be a Christian, follow Jesus, and that's all well and good. But Jesus constantly is saying, it's not me, like, it's the Father, it is God, it is, you know, and, you know, it's interesting because no one gets to the Father but through me. And I take that as like, he was a physical manifestation of God, right? So I think I took that as Jesus saying, you have to use God and act for the physical. And I became man and use your hands, use your mind. That's all God. It's all God. And I just think back to that now. And if I could have gone back 10 years and told Kaylee and her friend, you know, you're thanking God. Yeah, you are. And it's all God. It's not separate. It's not separate. It's not science and spiritual. You know, it's all one. And then Holmes also talks about, which of course resonated with me, like, Jew or Gentile, Muslim or a Hindu, you know, no religion is wrong or right. And in fact, he uses the sentence like, we're not going to sit here and debate like which religion is right. Like thousands of years of war and death have been done to try and figure that out. And there's no answer because it's not something that needs to be fought about. It's the heart and the center of it. Is that there is, Holmes says, the heart and the center of every religion, every faith, not a dogma. He actually says that. He says not an organized religion. He says, you know, therapists and psychologists have found that people need faith and religion. And it's not a dogma. It's not going to temple or mosque or mass every week. It's a belief in something greater than you. And that this thing responds to you. And I just thought that was really beautiful. You know, it's not Allah, it's not Yahweh, it's not Christ, it's not Muhammad, it's not Shiva. It's the heart, that pulsing heart of beauty and love and opportunity and harmony and potential and peace and wisdom. And that is what is true, and that is what is good, and that is what is the core of ourselves in our hearts and in our veins. And now the dog is barking because of the thunder, so I apologize if you hear him in the back. you know, and I was thinking again because I constantly go back to, you know, just what I was raised with this concept of, you know, God is something so separate. And it's not. And Holmes says God and successful spiritual treatment is the realization. It's not just, I remember being six and my mom was like determined that I was going to learn the Lord's Prayer, you know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And she was like, you say this every night. And so for every night, for years and years and decades, I would say this prayer, and it was just, you gotta say it before you can go to bed. I would literally get nervous if I didn't say it before bed. And it's like, Holmes is like, that's rote words and rote repetition, and that's not God. You know, God is, and treatment and prayer is saying something, speaking your desire, and then knowing fully that it will be answered by something greater than you. And whether that manifests through a kind stranger, you know, helping you out, or it manifests through my friend Ashley texting me this morning, stressed out, this poor dog needs to go out, and then my whole family goes and we all help out the dog. Like, or if it's something like, you know, you just, yeah, I'm tired, I'm gonna go take a nap. Just, you speak your desire and you know it's gonna be fulfilled, or you know it because there's something greater than you that is there for you. And there was a point I wanted to make, because as you all know, I love my podcast. So just give me a moment here, because I was listening to a podcast and I'm trying to remember what was said that resonated with me so much. It'll come to me. But I, again, like, all these synchronicities happen, like where I was listening to a podcast and it's like, Oh, okay. So my mom, actually, she's into podcasts now too. It's a family thing, I guess. And there is, do you all know who Alan Alda, Alan Alda is from MASH? Mm-hmm. He played Hawkeye. Really great show, classic from the 70s, I think. And so he has a podcast now. And, you know, God bless him, he has Parkinson's. I didn't know this, my mom told me. And he does a whole podcast about communication. And it's called Clear and Vivid. I highly recommend you check it out. And he has all these experts on about communication. And the end goal is like kindness and communicating kindly with others. And my mom's like, you have to listen to this episode, because I was having some frustrations at work where I was dealing with an older client. And, you know, God bless her, she did not know how the differences between like her file folder and a Google, and like, it was a lot. And she's like, Kaylee, you need to listen to this podcast where he talks about, he has this social scientist PhD on, and this gentleman speaks about fluid versus crystallized knowledge. And in your 20s and 30s, you have fluid knowledge. And it is the time where like you suck up knowledge and information, and you're learning and you're learning and you're learning and you're brilliant. And you got these tech brilliant guys, you know, Mark Zuckerberg founding Facebook, and like people creating brilliant art. And like me, I'm a project manager now at 29. And like, it, you know, cause you're in your 20s and your 30s and your brain's like, let's do it. And then you hit like 45 and, you know, your body and your mind starts to change. And what tends to be better is that you become, don't try to like keep up with that same pace of like learning, 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 boom, boom, boom. Because your brain's just not really there anymore. So what you should do instead is you should try to start teaching or take up a hobby. But like, don't try to make it your income, you know? Don't try to be a star litigator anymore, or don't try to be the CEO of this company. Guide the new guys, guide the lawyers, guide the young people, you know? And then take up your own teaching or hobbies and find a new way to channel that passion and energy. And the gentleman was like, you know, I used to be a master economist and I'd write papers. And he's like, I look at it now and I'm in my 60s. And he's like, I can't read the math I did in my 30s. Like, he's like, I don't know how I did this. And it's just because your brain changes. And anyway, long story short, it's a brilliant episode. It's Clear and Vivid with Alan Alda, and it's Arthur Brooks. If you want to check out this episode, you can go at Google or Apple Podcasts. And long story short, the point I was making is that this gentleman, Dr. Brooks, he said they found that, similar to what Holmes said, you know, decades earlier, we have found that there are four things that people chase that they won't, they think will make them happy but won't, which is like wealth, money, power, prestige, and like material things. But there are three things that like they find that everyone needs at a certain age and that really do bring happiness, which is family, friends, and faith. And I just thought that was so interesting. And he actually says, like, I'm not talking a dogma. I'm not talking about an organized religion. I'm talking about a faith and something that lets you have some spiritual thought and quiet time with yourself and something bigger than you. This guy said that. He's like an economist, a social scientist. Like, he said all this. And it was a really fascinating episode. And Alan Alda is just precious and national treasure. And so I recommend you all just enjoy and go listen to that. And then it just resonated again, like synchronicities with what Holmes is saying. Like, we need that faith. We need that spirit. And there are people like my friend who I love dearly, and I wish him all the happiness. He just bought a house and he's moving. And like, but he's very grounded in the 3D. And like, you know, it's also interesting because we were talking last night at dinner again, and I'll wrap up here shortly, but he said, I have a friend, and this friend has been in his 40s, and he works till midnight every night, and he owns 4 different companies. And he's retiring at 40. And I said, that's amazing. Has he had a good life? And my friend, he sort of paused and he said, no. And that's what he's saying now to me, is that he's tired. He has 6 cars and 3 houses, but he hasn't had family and he hasn't had time to himself. He has no hobbies. And so it was interesting to hear him say that, because even someone who's so atheist in science, and he lifts, he does powerlifting competitions, and in the 3D, even he was able to stop and say, no, he doesn't have something greater. And that greater is this spirit and this love, and it'll guide us to a new passion. Like, for example, I remember reading Dr. Joseph Murphy was so inspired by his father, who was a school teacher for the majority of Joseph's life. And towards the end, when he was like over 50, 56, over that, he taught himself French and was fluent in French, fluent in English, just taught himself. And Joseph Murphy just said, I remember seeing him studying it, and he just taught himself. It was like, no big deal. I want to learn French. Okay. And so spirit will guide you to your passions and to your loves. It will guide you to the right action, and it will act through you. Because it's in all the potential of I just think back of baby Michael and this beautiful little creature, and like all that beautiful love and power and healing in his soul and his body. And that's pure potential in God and love. And that's all within us and beating with us too. And Holmes ends the chapter with this gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous line that I remembered, because it just struck me, which is that it is greater spirit, God spirit, whatever you'd like to call it, is greater than the personal I, but acts through the personal I. And Sherry's song actually said that. It talks about being part of stardust of an old galaxy, and we're all a part, something greater than you, but still in you, greater than the sum of its parts, but still all of its parts. And spirit and God is greater than the I, but acts and is through us and is the I. And I just pray that everyone wakes up to the truth that God is the I, and God is in you, and spirit is you, made manifest, and acting through you constantly, and is beautifully and constantly there. I just think that's such a beautiful blessing, and I invite you now to just take a deep breath with me. Inhale and exhale, and if you'd like, you can close your eyes and just do a little bit of a wiggle. And if you want to picture yourself back in that garden, you can stand up now from the bench and wiggle and say thank you and exit the garden. Exit the garden. Take a deep breath and open your eyes, and another deep breath and exhale. That's spirit. That is spirit. God. Beautiful. Thank you all. That's it. Thanks.